Godhead.
Of whom?
Of whom?
The supreme personality of Godhead.
The supreme personality of Godhead.
Anyone. Is able to overcome.
Is able to overcome.
Mayam.
Mayam.
You lose your energy.
You lose your energy.
Yeah. By whom?
By whom?
The original
nation.
Jana.
Jana.
People in general.
Boyati.
Boyati. Become bewildered.
Veda.
Veda.
Understand.
Na.
Na.
Not.
No.
Artham.
Artham.
The aim of life.
The aim of life.
Tham.
Tham.
Unto him.
Unto him.
Personality is God.
Nirjita,
Nirjita, completely controlling. Atma,
Atma,
living entities.
Atma
Gunam,
Atma Gunam,
and his external conditions.
Parisham,
Parisham, the Lord,
Lord,
who is transcendent in this situation.
Namah,
Namah, we offer our respectful
obeisances.
Bhuteshu, unto all living beings. Samam, deeply situated. For every voice. Charantam, controlling or ruling them. Translation. No one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that the world is everyone. Making one lose the sense to understand the meaning of life. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone, and who is equally disposed toward all that he is. Let us offer our obeisances for him, responsible please. No one can overcome
him.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory engine. Which is so strong that it bewilders everyone. Making one lose the sense to understand the name of life. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone, and who is equally disposed toward all living entities. Let us offer our obeisances unto him. So, we see here this apostle story is continuing. And in this first remark, they essentially remark, is addressing the conflict, the shore of the ocean built, and they're addressing the Lord. And talking about the Lord's glories. And we see here that Rama is talking about the illusory energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead and how the illusory energy overcomes all living entities. And to such an extent, the living entities actually forget the existence of Krishna. They even forget the existence of themselves. They think that by the influence of Krishna's mind, they think that they're the pure body. And this is one of the, as we understand, this is one of the essential teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Is that we're not this material body, but actually we're the spirit soul inside of the body. So it was too late already. So the same point here is being demonstrated or explained by Lord Ma, how all of the entities are overcome by Krishna's mind, but then he makes the point that one, that the mind is actually controlled by Krishna. So, as we see, Krishna points out to Arjuna in the 7th chapter of the Gita. This is Daivesha Gunayim, Ramayana, this divine energy of mind, consisting of three modes of information, is very difficult to overcome. This is Bhagavad, very, very difficult. And practically speaking, the procurable, no one can overcome these modes of mind. And we see in the Bhagavatam, things instead of canto, how it's pointed out that other calls for Ra by their own endeavor, by the help of others, or by a combination of both, they living in cannot overcome the influence of the nature. And the practical reality we see in this material world is that most people are not even aware. The practical reality we see is that people are not even aware that they're being influenced by the mind of information. They actually think in this material world that everything is going on very nicely by the way arrangement. So here, Lord Brahma is pointing out how Maya is controlled by the Lord. And understanding the point from the Gita, that if one takes shelter of the Supreme Person of Earth, then very easily one can overcome the material world. And we see this also highlighted in the 10th canto, where it says, Sattva-diye bhagavad-param mahat-padam pamukha-dhamya-shavarana-de bhagavad-duryabhasa-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param-param world is like a vast ocean. So, you know, it's like when I was young, I used to do a lot of swimming. I used to swim every day, swim a few miles. But then, you know, if someone was to drop you, no matter how much you can swim, if someone was to drop you in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you know, from, I think, from Sydney to Los Angeles, about 11,000 kilometers, but not much in between. So they drop you in the middle of that. What are you going to do? How far will you swim? So it's like that in the material world. It's actually even more so. It's much faster than that. And, you know, if one was to be dropped in the ocean, you have some sense of, okay, I need to be out of this. You have some idea of what you should potentially do. Maybe there's some ripple floating past or something you grab onto or whatever. There'd be some notion of how to overcome it. But the situation in the pure world is the jiva is not aware. Not aware of the situation. This is the interesting nature of the Lord's mind. So powerful. So powerful we don't even know. It's just like being in a prison house and not even being aware you're in prison. Thinking it's such a nice place that there's nothing else to be concerned about. And that's the situation for the jiva in the pure world. We're in this prison of mind. Sometimes Prabhupada uses the term dirga, being in prison. The one is in this prison, but liking being there, mostly. But I'll read the program a second, but this is a very interesting point that Prabhupada points out in the program. One of them, which I find very interesting, is he talks about the illusory nature of this material world, where there's this aspiration where people are thinking, I'm going to be happy, I'm going to achieve this, I'm going to be, you know, so successful, etc., etc. But it's a desire which never fulfilled. Always hankering for more and more satisfaction, improvement, whatever, in the pure world. But actually, these desires are never fulfilled. And the living entities generally find they wind up being dissatisfied. But the point that Ramara is getting to here is that by taking shelter in Krishna, one becomes satisfied. Because he's saying that the Vedas, that's not the basis for things. You try to enjoy yourself in the future world, you're going to be dissatisfied. But if you offer our basis to Krishna, you become happy, you become peaceful. So this is the point that's being demonstrated here. And as these prayers go on, we'll see that more and more. Lord Brahma's pointing out the situation of the jiva and how to overcome this situation in the future world. So we should follow up first. The prowess of the Supreme Person of Godhead Krishna certainly controls all living entities, so much so that the living entities have forgotten the aim of life. And this story is demonstrating so much this point. We see, if we go back a few verses, you'll see that Prabhupada, one of the Prabhupada's, tells a story about how Indra offended Devasa Muni. He was riding on his elephant, big powerful elephant. Indra seemed to be a big powerful demigod, you know, he's the king of heaven. No one, he's thinking, no one greater than him. And he becomes proud of his position, proud of his opulence. And Durvasa offers him a dana, offering him some respect. And Indra is thinking, well, I'm such a great person. And he gives it, you know, why should I take this dana? He gives the dana to his elephant. He puts it on the trunk of Airavata. And Airavata, he doesn't, he's just an elephant, he doesn't know what a dana is. So he just throws it in the air and tramples it underfoot. Durvasa became very upset, so he cursed Indra, that you become devoid of all your opulence. And at the same time as Indra was cursed, the Devatas were fighting with the Daityas. And so, because Indra became bereft of all his opulence, they lost the battle against the Daityas, and therefore they're in this position. So this pastime is very much demonstrating the danger of becoming overly influenced, or actually influenced by the laws of nature, becoming influenced by our mature position to think we're actually something wonderful. And how we see that, you know, there's a nice verse in the 8th chapter of Gita, Krishna's explaining to Arjuna, he said, if you listen to my instructions, you act according to my instructions, you will overcome all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. Krishna says, by my grace, not by our own endeavor. For the jiva in the mature world is thinking, by my endeavor, I will do this, by my endeavor, I'll do that. But as we see, Krishna defines in the Gita that this is actually demoniac mentality. That once thinking that by my endeavor, by my reign, I'll conquer this, I'll get this wealth, I'll defeat this enemy, whatever it is, you know, then this is demoniac mentality. But Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that, you know, if you listen to me, you'll overcome all these obstacles to condition life by my grace. But however, if you don't listen to me but act out of false ego, you'll be lost. And this is what we see, living anything in this pure world. Not acting according to Krishna's instructions is completely lost. You don't have to look very far, just look around in the pure world, and you see that all these views are completely lost. They have no understanding of who God is, and who they are, and what the situation is in the pure world. They're very, very bewildered. And we see that Arjuna, who is intelligent enough to listen to Krishna's instruction, and then towards the end of the 18th chapter, this is Tat-Prasadam-Yajra, by your mercy, I've understood. By your mercy, I've actually understood. Now I'm going to act according to instructions. So Arjuna was actually fortunate enough to hear Krishna's instructions and to understand Krishna's instructions. And actually, we all have the same opportunity. The Bhagavad Gita has been presented to give us this opportunity to hear Krishna's instructions. But not only Krishna's instructions, but to also to reach your Prabhupada's purpose and to understand this science of natural truth through the mouth of the Prabhupada. So we're actually very, very fortunate. I was reflecting on this the other day. I was talking with a Bodhi who was just undergone some major surgery. And it was, you know, quite close to death. It seems to be like he's getting out of there. I was talking to him on the phone and just reflecting, you know, he was reflecting on what had happened to him. And I was just sort of sharing with him some of the realizations I've had over the years and experience that I have been reading Prabhupada's books. And then Srila Prabhupada, he makes a really interesting statement how the devotee sees all these obstacles that come, all these difficulties that come as gifts from Krishna. Now one might think, you know, well, how is it, you know, he's just undergone this operation for cancer, almost died from cancer. How do you see that as a gift? But if you reflect on that, you look at the teachings of Queen Kunti, she prays that, you know, she asks Krishna, let these calamities come again and again and again. Why? Because when the calamities come, what do I do? I think of you, I take shelter of you. And then when I take shelter of you, I no longer fear repeated birth and death. So, in the same way, when I was having this conversation with Sarodhi, he actually, as a result of this cancer, he took shelter of Krishna. He was, you know, he was more and more absorbed in Krishna, so these things come. And one who's intelligent, one who actually has a good sense, will use this knowledge to take shelter of the Lord more and more. And the demigods have this same sense, because you see what they're doing. They're not, you know, if you look at Varuna and all the other Indra, they all discuss among themselves that they lost the war, they were so impoverished, they couldn't even perform the yagyas. They had no wealth to perform the yagyas. So they think, what are we going to do? We're completely prevented of all outcomes, of all good fortune. So then they decide to come see Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma arrives and takes shelter of Krishna. And so, being that they're naturally devotees, they took shelter of the Lord, they went to the ocean, and they started offering prayers. So they're actually using their good intelligence in the proper way. The demons, on the other hand, they also have good intelligence. I mean, just look at, you know, how many things that, you know, the civilizations they've created, and all these mechanical things they're doing, electrical things like microphones and computers and stuff. Obviously, it takes good intelligence to do that, but they're misusing that intelligence. They're using it to increase their sense of enjoyment. They're using it to try to enjoy the world more and more. Therefore, that intelligence will bring about the downfall. Just like we see that Krishna talks about in the 16th chapter, how the mentality of the demons trying to enjoy the material world, trying to exploit the material world, it brings about their downfall. This is exactly what's happened. But Indra, he became proud of his opulence and he brought about his downfall. But by the good instruction of Brahman, they're actually, you know, on the path of rectification. Nate Duswantipitim Vishnu Guru entities have forgotten that the aim of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. The external energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. This is the illusory nature of the living entity thinking, I can be happy here. I don't need anything else. Everything I need is here, and I can be really happy. But Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. But that is Maya. It's illusion, Prabhupada. So is Maya. In other words, it is a dream that is never to be fulfilled. And then this, they have an expression in Australia, that people ask someone, how are you doing? They say, I'm living the dream. And whenever I hear that, I reflect, I say, actually, you are living the dream because you're thinking you're going to be happy in this material world, but actually, you'll never be happy in this material world because we're experiencing so much difficulty, so much suffering. And as long as we're trying to find satisfaction in that illusion, that which is not, we'll never be satisfied. And this is the point that's been demonstrated. Thus, every living being is illusioned by the external energy of the Supreme Lord. That illusory energy is undoubtedly very strong, but she's fully under control of the transcendental person who is described in this verse as Parasham, the transcendental Lord. The Lord is not a part of the material creation, but is beyond creation. And so, when you look at the logic that's being given by Srila Prabhupada here, is as long as we try to battle with the material world, we're caught up in material energy. And you cannot overcome the material situation by taking shots in the material situation. It's not possible because it just captures you more in that material situation. The more you try to control the material energy, the more you fight the Lord over the material energy, because she's more powerful than we are, the more we become controlled and subdued by the material energy. I'm only by taking shelter of something greater. I'll give you an example of my own life. When I was at school, I was kind of like, you know, very tall and thin. I was a bit sort of weak and really. And I used to get picked on a lot by others. And I just, you know, I wasn't a fighting person. I used to get bullied a lot. But, you know, so I wasn't a fighting person. But then, at one point, when my older brother got into, I think it was the third form, there was one personally, who was kind of like the school tough, you know, he was a real tough guy, like a bully at school. And he became really good friends with my brother. And because he was really good friends with my brother, he liked me, so he protected me. So from that point on, I had no fear. No one would even, you know, say bad words to me because they knew that this tough guy liked me. So it's the same thing here, is if you take shelter of Krishna because he's the supreme, there's no one greater than Krishna, then Maya isn't significant. Maya can be easily overcome. And as sure, but it's actually not that difficult. We think it's a very difficult thing to overcome the most natural nature, but it's actually not that difficult. And the secret is why? It's because this is not our condition. To be influenced by Maya is not our natural state. This is an unnatural state. As sure, Prabhupada says, some God who laid on the shaft, which essentially is the Vedic apparatus, but essentially means the jiva cannot actually come into contact with natural nature. We think, because of illusion, that we're in this body. Because of our perception, we're identifying with this misidentification, this wrong situation. But actually, if we understand our original nature as a servant of Krishna, and we take shock of that original nature, then very quickly, and Prabhupada makes that point, is very quickly you return to your natural condition. And we see that. That when the living entity comes in contact with the constant devotional service, then very quickly they change. Very quickly they give up their past activities, their past sinful activities, and start to practice activities of the good devotional service. It's like, it doesn't take long at all. And if you look at it, you think, well, you know, I've been practicing devotional service for 40 years, and you know, I'm not a good devotee yet. But keeping in perspective, how long have we been in this material world? So I'll point something out, countless lifetimes. You cannot actually trace out the beginning of when we came to the material world. So if you take it in that sense, look at the time we've been here and how long we've been practicing bhakti. It's only a moment we've been practicing bhakti. And we've made so much advancement. We've progressed so much on the path of bhakti. So just by taking shelter of Krishna, and the verse I was quoting before is Sam Shudhiye Bhadavala. It talks about how the material world is like a vast ocean. And if one takes shelter, the lotus feet, Bhavam Buddha Murare, says to take shelter, the lotus feet Murare, then the water in this vast ocean, the material world, becomes shrunk to like the water contained in the water of a car. So you know, like when you go to the ocean, you see cars, they're maybe 2 inches across. Even a small child can cross over that pain difficulty. So the point that Brahma's making in that verse is that by taking shelter of Krishna, as Krishna says in Gita, not very hard. But because we're identifying with them, even as we're practicing bhakti, because we're identifying with our conditioning, we're thinking it's so difficult. But if we give up this identification with the conditioning, it's actually very, very easy. It's very easy to become restored to our original pure identity, this nirmala. This our original, this is our state, this is who we are. We are the devotees of Krishna. And if we accept that, we identify with that, and we identify with Krishna, instead of identifying with the external energy, then very easily we cross over this external nature. As Prabhupada is saying here, Krishna also controls external energy. Bhagavad Gita clearly says that the strong material energy controls everyone, and that getting out of their control is extremely difficult. That controlling energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and works under his control. As a fact, it's very difficult to overcome. Very, very difficult to overcome material nature, as long as we try. As long as we try to be the controller, as long as we try to be the doer, we are going to struggle. But if we just get this one point, that if I simply spend the Krishna, he'll take care, he'll take care of everything, he'll help us overcome this very easily, then it becomes a very easy process. So that controlling energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and works under his control. So I was in Australia for a while, and I was listening to a nice master by Prabhupada Chaitanya Maharaj, and he was giving class from the fourth chapter of the Adi Leela. And he made a really key point at one point. He said that when the jiva sincerely surrenders to Krishna, it really tries to please Krishna. And I thought it might be interesting to talk about this because it is Sarvini. Is this Sarvini?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, very interesting pastime, but I'll give you that a second. In the fourth chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's probably the best description we have about the nature of Srimati Radharani. And Maharaj is making this really interesting point that when the jiva sincerely tries to surrender Krishna, just worship with genuine endeavor to please Krishna, then Radharani becomes pleased in that. And she approaches Krishna and then says to Krishna, look, this person, they're trying to serve so nicely, they were worried. Please accept me into your party. And he was actually quoting a class from Prabhupada. And then Krishna is of such a nature that he's completely controlled by Radharani. So when Radharani says, please accept me, nothing Krishna accepts. So the reason that we see that, I don't feel particularly qualified to speak on the topic of Radharani, but because it is starting me, and I have been asked to speak a little bit about Chakra, and I thought I would just touch on it briefly. About the nature of the residents of Vrindavan, in particular, in the devotees, and in particular, Srimati Radharani, is their whole approach, or their whole kind of consciousness, is simply to satisfy Krishna. And we see, now it's the season, just after the hot season, as finished in the rain season's coming fast. And it describes how, you know, in the hot season, anyone who's been here through the summer snows how everything just dries up, becomes completely parched, and you get to the point where you're waiting for the bench, like, you know, really hoping it's going to be over soon. And then the rainy season comes, and all the vegetation, the trees, the plants, the animals, they all become happy. They all become peaceful. And they're very satisfied. And so it's described how the residents of Braj, when they're feeling separation from Krishna, it's almost like nothing can satisfy them. They become completely disturbed. But when they get their contact with Krishna, then they become completely satisfied, completely peaceful. Nothing else satisfies them. Because their whole focus, their whole attention is to Krishna. They have no other business. And when I was coming here from Kanpur, I had the good fortune to be riding in the train with Krishna Maharaj and Prabhupada. At one point, someone was asking Krishna Maharaj the point or the question about living around the Kuna. And I thought the Maharaj's answer was very interesting because it really epitomizes the consciousness that's required for someone to actually be in Vrindavan. Of course, we could be physically sitting here, but are we actually in Vrindavan? And Maharaj made a really, what I thought was an interesting point, in that it's really about the consciousness, not where you're physically situated, it's about where your consciousness is. And he was describing how with the residents of Vrindavan, their consciousness is that they only have one interest in life, and that's the biggest question. If there's any concept of trying to satisfy ourselves, trying to enjoy ourselves, or even trying to enjoy Krishna, or trying to enjoy with Krishna, this is a selfish mentality. And with this mentality, one can actually be situated in Vrindavan. But when we get to this point of being wholly and solely existing for the pleasure of Krishna, then that is consciousness of being shrinking down and down. So the process of bhakti really opens us up to that possibility. Even there's so many aspects of bhakti we can practice and that we perceive it in bhakti on my possible relationships. And through any one of these angas or through all these angas of bhakti, one can actually come to this point of removing all the material nasa, removing all the material desires, identification, whatever, and getting to this point where we're only acting as Krishna. Because the whole process, especially Vaidhisattva Bhakti, which is what we're practicing, at least what I'm practicing, the whole point of Vaidhisattva Bhakti is to purify one of the miracles, to cleanse the heart, to get to the point where the natural self awakens. And so, through the process of bhakti, that really effectively does that. So, I don't have much else to say. Is there any comments, questions, please?
From the team.
Yes, sir.
Can the devotees live the dream? If so, how can we proceed?
Why live the dream? Live reality. It's just like, one of my main services in this one is to teach deity worship. And one of the main principal elements of deity worship is cleanliness. So cleanliness has many different facets. Part of cleanliness is meditation. So through meditation, we have a class on mantras and meditation. And I actually subtitle the class Accessing Spiritual Reality. Through meditation, or becoming absorbed in the pastime of Krishna. Obviously, we don't do it when we're in the neophyte stage. We don't really get to that point in the neophyte stage. We need to become purified. Because only when we become purified can we focus fully on the pastime of Krishna without any external distractions. But when one is actually fully absorbed in the pastime of Krishna, it becomes reality. And I'll give you an example. There's a story that took place here in Vrindavan with Santana Goswami, where he was meditating on the pastime of the Lord, and he was actually, situated, himself is there in the pastimes. I mean, apparently, it was kind of an interesting story, how he was completely so much absorbed that he's actually there. Well, one of the stories from the 10th chapter of the Nectar Devotion about the Brahma and the sweetness. So absorbed was he in that it wasn't just, he was just daydreaming or something, it wasn't a dream, it was reality. So much so that when he touched the sweet rice to check whether it was edible or not, he burnt his finger. Even though the sweet rice was in meditation, when he came out of meditation, he saw his finger was actually burnt. So because you come in contact with transcendental nature through meditation, it's reality, it's not a dream. And that's the point that materialists go, they dream of so many, you know, I'm going to become a millionaire, I'm going to do this, I'm going to have a fast car, build a road, you know the whole story. But they never get it, they're always hankering for it, they might get a little bit. And that then, it's like, you know, dangling the carrot in front of them, you know, dangling the carrot in front of the donkey. It's trying to reach it, but it never actually reaches it. And so, when material nature does that, it angles these carrots in front of us. And we see with the advertising industry, for instance, a very effective tool of mind to dangle all these carrots in front of these poor Jesus who think they can actually get all these things, but they never do. And they live their life frustrated, hankering for things they'll never have. And so I would suggest that for a brother, don't live the dream, live the reality.
Thank you.
Surrendering to Krishna doesn't mean there's going to be no disturbances. Surrendering to Krishna means we understand that what's that verse? Prabhupada quotes this in the 12th chapter of the Gita, I think it was 6 or 7, where he quotes it. And he gives an amazing purport, especially on this point. And he said that the devotee understands that all these things are happening due to my own past misdeeds, my past sinful activities. But by Krishna's grace, they have been reduced to just a token. And then he says a line that always stuck in my head. He says, therefore, it is better to suffer than to protest. So whatever happens, we understand, it's because of what I've done in the past. So don't complain about it. You're the one who's reaping the results of your past activities. Just understand that by Krishna's kindness, that he's reducing it to just a token. And it's something I was reflecting on a few days ago. It's like, when we look at, if we try to look objectively at what's going on in our lives as devotees of Krishna, then it's so hard to fathom the depth of Krishna's kindness upon us. Just at every step, just the fact that we're all sitting here in Sri Vrindavan Dharma, however long we're here for, it's just the inconceivable mercy of Krishna that we can come to a place like Sri Vrindavan Dharma. You know, when I landed in Delhi 2 weeks ago, Super Swami, who's the head of Shari in Delhi, said, so I'm going to tomorrow to Radhakund to do a ceremony with my daughter. And I asked him to come. I thought, yeah, sure. And I just was sitting there at Radhakund trying to comprehend the mercy of the Lord and how it is that someone like me can come. You know, I come from Australia. And Prabhupada, all Australian Malaysia dish. It's a land of Malaysia. If you go to Australia, you'll understand why. Main activities in Australia are eating meat and drinking alcohol. And we're very proud about it. And so I come from this background. Somehow or other, by Krishna's inconceivable mercy, I can understand it. I get to come in. It is by coming in contact with Krishna's pure devotee and taking the practice of Krishna consciousness, I can come in. But we can all come in. So Krishna's mercy is just inconceivable. And I feel that if we can just reflect on that, no matter what happens to us in life, as Prabhupada said, we see the greatest challenges or difficulties as being gifts. We can see whatever comes as a gift from Krishna because it gives us increased opportunity to think of him. Then life doesn't become such a struggle. Life actually becomes blissful. But as long as we're identifying with the challenge, rather than identifying as a gift, then life is a struggle.
Good. The Buddha mentioned the story of Dear Krishna Swami saying that we should not enjoy Krishna eating. But also we hear Prabhupada says that we should enjoy our devotional service and we should be happy. It's our duty to be happy in devotional service. And Maya Sutra says, Susukum Kartam, the closest itself is enjoyable. So could you please elaborate what is the difference between having this enjoying spirit and then just enjoying devotional service?
Well, Susukam Kartam Abhyam means it's everlasting and joyfully performed. It doesn't necessarily mean it's enjoyably performed, it's joyfully performed. It means we perform with happiness. We're happy, we're blissful to have the opportunity to serve Krishna. But we try to avoid this enjoying spirit. And it's just like, I do quite a lot of deity worship. And when you do deity worship, you get so much opportunity for Maharaj Sahib. It's just like unbelievable. They do abhishekas and things like that, and sometimes thousands of preparations for deities. And as a pujari, you can take as much as you like. But I never do. I never take anything because I don't want to develop this enjoying spirit. But I wind up getting plenty of Maharaj Sahib. There's never a problem with that. I've got the blindfold from Srivas, when we saw the deities in Chopani, I've got the latest pillow that she was sleeping on. But I never asked for it, it just comes. And so I think, if we're trying to get all these things, that to me that's, this is just my realization of it, and someone may correct that in mind. But I feel that when we're trying to get these things all the time, it's a bit of an enjoying spirit, but if we're just happy to accept what comes of its own accord. Just like we see, I think it's in the beginning of the Gita, it says that happier the chakras to whom a fight comes of its own accord, because that's the nature they want to fight. So for the body, they're just happy when service comes, whatever arrangement it is coming, when we have the opportunity to serve Krishna, we become happy at that. But not that we go, looking for the mercy, because there's so much mercy, it's unlimited. Just accept what comes by Krishna's arrangement, be joyful. Not that we seek to enjoy that. And the fact of it is and as Krishna is saying, it's joyfully performed. That's the nature of bhakti, is it brings pleasure for the self. So we don't need to go looking for the happiness, because it comes. And as we become more and more purified through the process of bhakti, the joyful nature of bringing anything comes from the world will. Because that's the nature. As it says in Vedanta Sutras, and under the word Yasaya, the nature of the jiva is to be constantly experiencing pleasure. So you don't have to go looking for it, you just have to become purified and it becomes revealed. I don't know if that answers the question.
Thank you. Could you please tell us about the Damodari approach to raise the Bhakti conscious topic?
Yeah, like I was saying before, I don't really feel qualified to speak too much about Krishna's pastimes. Only just what I've read in Prabhupada's books. I don't really have enough brain power to read other people's books. I read the Bhagavatam. Just like I was in when Kanpur, his oldest Manuswami gave a class on one of the verses. And it was just, to me, it just seemed like a very straightforward verse. Yeah. And the way he explained it in so many different ways, and quoting from Vishnachakali, this one, that one, I was like, wow. And I was like, I didn't understand it at all from reading. So, essentially, the Damodara Lila, there's many aspects to Damodara Lila. Obviously, there's the aspect of Krishna taking the position of the child and being completely at the mercy of his devotee. And this is, Prabhupada explains it really interesting. Now, Prabhupada, Krishna takes many different, performs many different pastimes. In those pastimes, he takes many different roles. So sometimes Krishna will take the role of being the parent, like we see in his Dwapara Lila. And sometimes he takes the role of being the child. Now, some people think, well, being the parent is superior because you can tell the child what to do. But actually, on the transcendental level, being the child is superior. Because Krishna, in the role of a child, in this pastime of a child, he doesn't have to worry about anything. He doesn't have to worry about where his meals are coming from. He doesn't have to worry about waking up or going to bed. He just plays. He just has a good time. And then Mother Yasoda, there's so much anxiety for him. So this Kavanaugh Leela, one aspect of it, is Mother Yasoda's anxiety manifesting for Krishna to be a good boy. And so when he grows up, he'll have good behavior and things like that. So that's one aspect. But there's many, many different aspects in this. I'm going to go to the father of the line to speak about that. And just on closing, I just want to make one clarification. I don't know how many of you were present in the class yesterday from a lot of people. He made a point which is, I mean, I agree with the point, but I think there's more to it than that. Where he's talking about how it's difficult to see Krishna, actually, we cannot see Krishna. And that's true. With these visual eyes, we cannot see Krishna. But Krishna, out of his mercy, he makes arrangements so we can see him. That's the Arch Avatar. The Arch Avatar, Prabhupada explains, is very sula, or matter. Because we have conditioned senses, and we cannot see Krishna with conditioned senses. So Krishna, out of his kindness, he comes, he descends in the Arch Avatar, which is on the five incarnations of the Lord, so that we can directly interact with him, so that we can actually interact with the transcendental. With our material senses. So I just
what to speak of the name.
Not what to speak of the name, but what to speak of the name of the Lord. So Krishna, out of his kindness, he manifests in so many different ways so that we can have interaction with him. So I was just speaking on my topic, that's all that you can know your topic. Anything else at all? Thank you very much, your Prabhupada.